Texas Monthly.
Hey there, I'm John Spong with Texas Monthly Magazine, and this is One by Willie, a podcast in which I talk each week to one notable Willie Nelson fan about one Willie song that they really love. This week, we talk to one of Fort Worth, Texas's favorite sons, T-Bone Burnett. He's the legendary producer behind Counting Crows' 1993 debut album, August and Everything After, the acclaimed Oh Brother, Where Art Thou soundtrack from 2000, Alison Krauss and Robert Plant's 2007 album, Raising Sand, and, of course, Willie's 2010 album, Country Music. T-Bone's going to take us to what may be the darkest corner of Willie's songwriting catalog, his early 60s murder ballad, I Just Can't Let You Say Goodbye. The song first appeared on Willie's 1966 album, Live Country Music Concert at Panther Hall Ballroom in Fort Worth, Texas, a record that has long been something of a holy grail for hardcore Willie nerds. And what do you know? It turns out that a 17-year-old T-Bone Burnett was actually in the audience the night that was recorded. T-Bone will talk about that show, about Willie's years in Fort Worth and their influence on his music, and why he thinks of Willie as a true holy man. Let's do it.
These are
the flesh around your throat is pale, indented by my fingernails.
What's so great about I Just Can't Let You Say Goodbye?
Well, you know, sometimes you write songs for dramatic effect. They're, you know, it's not always the songwriter writing about his own life. And I've always been drawn to those dark songs. I love those dangerous kind of songs. And this was one I heard in 1966 at Panther Hall for the first time, and it never left me.
So it's a murder ballad, right?
Yeah.
Explain murder ballads.
I don't know if I can explain it. I know that it was, the murder ballad was the, you know, the O.J. trial of the day. It was the medium. It was the medium through which these horror stories were transmitted, and it was pre, you know, electronic news. It was when things still traveled at a whole different pace.
Right.
And they're a beautiful, I mean, there's so many of them. Little Sadie, there's one after another. A Willow Garden, Tom Dooley, you know, if we really sat down, we could probably come up with a good 50 classic murder ballads. But,
and that's it, because I think, at least initially, it was oral history. It was talking about events that had actually happened in communities around the world, and they would make this song about it. And that's the thing. The song's alarming, you know? And sure, it's part of this tradition, but it's a different time, you know? So that song's written in the early 60s, but is it appropriate 40 years later?
I mean, yeah. I think if any of those, if Delia is still appropriate, I mean, Johnny Cash did a beautiful version of Delia, and certainly the more popular they are, the more that brings the issue to the fore, you know, the more people hear that. So it's not something we can run from, you know, so I'm fine with it. We need to talk about all these things. There's a lot of stuff we need to talk about. There's a lot of stuff we need to listen about in the country right now. Look, we have, remember Jack the Ripper and George Hodel, you know, I mean, we have these people that specialize in this stuff and ritualistic or misogynistic sadomasochism, all of that stuff, that's all real. But I don't know what you do about it. You don't escape it by just averting your gaze, that's for sure.
Right. And I was thinking in that genre, I mean, if I had a favorite murder ballad, it might be Excitable Boy by Warren Zevon.
Yeah, you know? No, that's right, exactly.
Or Goodbye Earl, actually, by the Dixie Chicks. I love both of those songs.
Yeah, exactly right. That's what I'm saying. So now we're going to be able to come up with 300 of them or something, because we've really started examining what they are.
And so, yeah, Willie's making you think about it, but he's not celebrating that person in any real sense, and he's certainly not encouraging that.
He's being the person, you know. He's putting himself there. But you know, that's cool. That's what drama is all about. It's creative. It's not a. Yeah, I'm fine with that. Listen, his language is so elegant in it. I had not planned on seeing you. I was afraid of what I'd do. But pride is strong, and here am I. And I just can't let you say goodbye. You know, that's beautiful, beautiful writing. And
stately.
Yeah, so, and it just stays at that level all the way through.
What force behind your evil mind can let your lips speak so unkind to one who loves as much as I? But I just can't let you say goodbye.
And if I remember the context right, so this is Willie's. It comes out in 66. It's his third record for RCA. And the deal was the first record that they're trying to break him nationally is Country Willie, His Own Songs, or I think that's the title. And it was all original compositions. You know, it doesn't do what RCA had hoped, but they love Willie so much and they know how big he is in Texas. And so they're thinking, we've got to capture something of what helps him go over in Texas and see if that works nationally. So the next record is Country Favorites, Willie Nelson Style, which is they team in with Ernest Tubbs' band and tell him to, you know, play hot. And it's just old country classics, and Willie just rips through them. And it's like the most danceable, wonderful record. And that doesn't sell either. And then they're like, well, it's still, he's working in Texas. Maybe what we got to do is record him in Texas. Let's go to Panther Hall, you know. And so they do this, and it's just the little three-piece. And yeah, it's just a great record, you know.
That's a beautiful performance. I mean, also, you know, you had Wade Ray, who I knew of as a fiddle player at the time. He was a great fiddle player, and he came and he was playing bass, and he wasn't exactly like a bass player. You know, he didn't play like a bass player. He's playing electric bass, and Willie's playing that gut string guitar, you know. And then Johnny Bush is playing drums or something, right?
Yeah.
And Johnny Bush, he was a singer too. I knew him right. As a singer. So it was kind of a strange being a singer and a fiddle player and a gut string guitar. They just totally tore it up.
Well, Willie's actually playing I think I've got a guitar. It's a Fender Jazzmaster.
Is that what it is?
Yeah, because on the cover of the record, he's standing there and he's playing this, and it's, I don't know what's more disorienting about the photograph, that he's playing an electric guitar or that he's wearing a suit.
Well, that's how I first saw him. That's where I first saw him. Well, I don't know if that's where I first saw him. When I was a kid, Willie Nelson was playing around downtown Fort Worth, you know.
Okay.
They were playing down at the north side. There were all these joints down on the north side. U.P. Wilson played down there. Cornell Dupree played down there. King Curtis. It was a cool music hang. And then, you know, Michael Meredith, Don Meredith's son, told me, you know, God, so you know when my dad sang Turn Out the Lights at every Monday night football game? He said, so at the time, at one point, you know, Willie Nelson was sleeping on our couch. And my mom would come in and go, the hillbilly singer's out there again. but that particular show, Panther Hall, was where there were a lot of shows back in those days. Every Friday and Saturday night, there were shows. I was in a band. I had a studio at the time. When I got out of high school, I went in with a couple of friends and bought a studio.
Oh, right, because you're about 18 when this happens.
Yeah, I'm 17, 18, okay. Yeah. And a lot of the time, we would all hang out at Panther Hall on the weekends. And then often the acts, we would go back over to the studio afterward, and they would record all night. They'd be so high on Benzedrine that they'd be looking for somewhere to go. It was always a fun all-night session, you know. Doug Kershaw, Conway Twitty, a lot of those cats came through.
Oh, wow.
At any rate, I just remember Willie Nelson had a lot of great songs. He had Hello Walls, that was an all-time, foundational song. And he was obviously far out. And that show he did was like...
Well, you said this was the concert that becomes this album. You're in the crowd that night?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Well, what's Panther Hall like?
Panther Hall was a bowling alley, as I remember, and it turned into a... Am I wrong about that? I can't remember. It was just a big bowl. It was always a groove. It was just a big room with everybody standing on the floor, and it would get pretty raucous. It would get very raucous.
Your voice is still, it speaks no more. You'll never hurt me anymore.
He seemed like he was going for it. He seemed like he was embracing all of that. My sense was that he wasn't digging the Nashville experience. He was a Texas guy and wanted that kind of freedom and independence. And there was a sense that there's a whole other young audience that's coming together around country music that has nothing to do with Nashville at all, I mean, Texas was the first place to break Bob Dylan. Texas was the first place to break Elvis Presley.
Oh, I didn't know any of that.
Yeah. Bob Dylan's first hit single, Subterranean Homesick Blues, I think, was a hit in Texas before it was anyplace else.
You're one of those people that identifies strongly with your hometown. You are from where you're from.
Yeah.
And you talked a lot about how you were exposed to just all kinds of music there.
Yeah.
And that seems to be part of the Fort Worth experience to a kid who's open for it. And Willie's living there at the time, right?
Yeah, that's right.
Did you hear him when he was a DJ in Fort Worth when you were a kid?
I don't remember that. I don't remember hearing him as a DJ. The amazing thing about Fort Worth, one of the amazing things, was it had all this support for the arts. And it was a little bit of an island. I always felt like it was San Antonio, Austin, and Fort Worth were a triangle of civility in Texas.
But it's also got that rough and tumble reputation, especially back then, because
Fort Worth, it was a very rough and tumble town. It was a Jacksboro Highway where the Skyliner Ballroom was a gambling and stripper strip, a dangerous strip. Jack's Honky Tonk was out there, and there were these sort of private house gambling places from the 20s and 30s. That was a rough area, wild. It was like Pottersville, and It's a Wonderful Life.
Well, so when Willie's there in the mid-50s and then back again in the early 60s, I think he and Johnny Bush might have been roommates there in the early 60s for a while. Those are formative years for Willie, and so this might seem kind of forced, but do you hear a Fort Worth influence?
Yeah, I most definitely, because it's got everything, and Willie's got everything in there, he's, first of all, he has that legendary phrasing where his voice is completely disconnected from the rest of his body in some amazing way. I don't know how he performs that alchemy, but so he's got his own complete sense of time and space and rhythm and storytelling, and it's just pure storytelling. So I think there's also a heavy folk music influence. There's an ethnicity about it, I think. Doesn't Willie have some Native American in him? Isn't he Native American,
I think his mom
is Native. So he's got that whole, that beautiful music. And, by the way, that music down there in Fort Worth, that the Native American music in Texas and Oklahoma, like the Kiowa Indian music, sounds very much like the Appalachian music.
Oh, really?
Well, if you think about it, Kiowa Indian music, in Appalachian music, so it's all, but then you remember that Andrew Jackson drove the Native Americans from the Appalachian Mountains out to the in the Trail of Tears out to Oklahoma. Yeah. So obviously they were all listening to each other at that time, you know. So, but anyway, he's got all that in there, and then there's Tex-Mex music in it certainly, and then he's just a pure songwriter too.
Yeah.
Forgetting all stylistic everything. It's just his pure songwriting is second to no one.
The sun is filled with ice and gives no warmth at all. The sky was never blue. The stars are raindrops searching for a place to fall. And I never cared for you.
So in 2010, you record the album Country Music with Willie, which is a great title because I think most fans think of that as Willie's bluegrass album, his only bluegrass album. And it's not really bluegrass. It's actually just this much older style of country music. Yeah. But so how does that project come to be?
Well, you know, Willie is always up for doing something. And I'd been working with these guys, the band, on the record for some time, growing out of the stuff we did together in 2000 with Oh Brother, Where Art Thou and Cold right. Mountain and that stuff. And the band was a killing band. We all thought it would be a good idea. We would love to do a record with Willie Nelson. So we proposed it to him, and he said yes, which we were thrilled about. And in fact, I think we do have another 10 or 15 songs that I would love to go back and look at one of these days, because all of them were great.
You're T-Bone Burnett, you know. Did you have to earn his trust, or what's the process like? You're about to go from being friends to being collaborators, and is that different?
No, Willie's just so good. A producer, I mean, he produces himself when he opens his mouth, you know. So all a producer has to do is make sure that everybody shows up at the same time and then say, let's start. And then it happens, you know.
How did you go about picking the songs? What about Willie are you trying to pair with the songs?
Man, I don't know. That's just a feel thing, you know.
Really?
I don't know. I don't remember which ones I suggested and which ones Willie brought. Seaman's Blues. I suggested Seaman's Blues. You know, I remember that one. I love that lyric. Life is so lonely on the ocean. No, too much time to think of yesterday. You know, I guess you're looking at a lyric that you can hear Willie, the story you can hear Willie telling.
Right.
You know, you can just hear it in his voice.
Yeah.
Nights are so lonely on the ocean. Too much time to dream of yesterday. If only I could carry out my notion and hit the trail for Texas right away.
In with the band, talk about the band, because that's the band on this Willie record. I was going to ask if there had been any idea to bring a drummer in, but if the band's already in place with no drummer, and you're doing music that's kind of pre-drums.
Yeah, I think, we were doing pre-drums music, and also Willie's so interesting without drums. when there's not somebody trying to hold him down, when he's just free. So it's, you know, it's always a... You sort of can't listen to him, right? you have to really play and let him play against you, and as you say, but even more than that, it's pre-drum music. Or another way of saying it is all these instruments are drums. You know, a guitar is a drum with six strings attached that you attack with your fingers and but it's still a resonating chamber, you know. So all of these instruments are in a way, or banjo's really a drum, right? It's got a drum head on it, and you tighten it up like a drum and all of that. So it was at a time when maybe the mandolin was more the backbeat rather than a snare drum. But it's just the feel, the cats playing together. These cats had this beautiful chemistry.
And I think I read, so was it everybody in a circle? Was it everybody sitting down and kind of playing together?
Yeah. Yeah, that whole period of time, too, I was just working live, really, with everybody singing and playing at the same time, because a different thing happens when you do it that way, you know.
That was one of the things that really kind of impressed is not a strong enough word. Listening, getting to know this record, this album, those are some of the best pickers in the world, but nobody shows off any, you know. Yeah. It's so understated. There's almost a humility to the playing on that record.
Yeah,
how does
there
that
is.
Happen?
Well, because as great as every one of those guys is, nobody's as good as Willie. So everybody, you know, as a picker, I mean, nobody plays as distinctively or powerfully or, you know, there might be people more fluid or more facile or things like that, but nobody lays down the law like Willie does. So everybody has to respect that. And not a word was said about it. It didn't need to be said because nothing else would have been appropriate, you know.
But even he's, again, restrained's not the word because it's as creative as it is when he goes nuts and takes off,
you know. Yeah.
But like, especially on Drinking Champagne, the very short intro that Willie plays on that, and it's maybe a bar, maybe two bars, it is beautiful, but so understated.
Drinking champagne and feeling no pain till early morning. Dining and dancing with every pretty girl I can find.
I love it.
And that is, you know, that's a song. Once Willie and I went, once two Fort Worth people were working together, It seemed only right to include Bill Mack in that.
And of course, Bill Mack, who wrote Drinking Champagne, was a legendary Fort Worth DJ. He had that great midnight cowboy trucking show that y'all would have listened to. But which one of y'all suggested Drinking Champagne?
I think probably Bill Mack suggested it. We were in Fort Worth one night on the bus with Willie and Bill Mack. No, I think Willie just said, let's do this. And Bill, it had been Bill's theme song. I mean, I don't remember if he played it every night or not, but he would, you know, he was very, very associated with that song, Bill Mack.
Because it was a monster hit for George Strait.
Yeah, later on, right? But this is probably the early 60s. When he wrote it.
Yeah.
I've been knowing it's that long. I mean, it was like, for me, that was like Wipeout or something. It was like just an integral part of the culture.
Any idea why Willie's still at it?
What else would he do? He's got to do this. This is what he does, you know. I hope he does it just every moment he wants to, you know. I'm sure this being off the road for all this time has been difficult for him. God, I mean, he's been in motion for how many years? 50, 60?
Yeah.
70? I don't even know how.
70, 75. I mean, he cut his first record in 54.
Wow. Yeah. I don't know. I was never attracted to the road. I never wanted to perform. But guys like him and Bob Dylan still goes out, you know, 100-some-odd days a year, because it's just how he does it. It's how he likes it. Those guys like it. They love that life.
I think you've referred to Willie on multiple occasions as a holy man.
He is a holy man.
What's that mean? What do you mean?
Well, he's a shaman, you know. He has this crazy ancient wisdom. He's a, you know, a holy fool. He's a holy man. He's a, everything he does is about transcendence, you know. Even I Just Can't Let You Say Goodbye, Whiskey River, right. All of it's about, there's always this sense of going beyond what everybody knows.
Death is a friend to love and I, 'cause now you'll never say goodbye.
All right, Willie fans, that was T-Bone Burnett.
Thank you.
A big thanks to him for talking to us about I Just Can't Let You Say Goodbye. And as always, a big thanks to you for tuning in. If you dig the show, please subscribe or visit our page at Apple Podcasts and give us some stars. And please also check out our One by Willie playlist at Apple Music. And be sure to tune back in next week to hear the great Roseanne Cash talk about one of Willie's all-time most iconic songs, Nightlife. One by Willie is a Texas Monthly production. The executive producer is Megan Crite. The show is produced and engineered by Brian Standifer. The graphic design is done by Emily Kimbrough and Victoria Milner. And I'm your host, John Spong. See y'all next week.